This is a production of Cornell University.
So it is 3:07 on Friday, December 5th, and we are beginning today's FSA meeting. First thing on the agenda, if Chelsea could please call the roll.
I think he's coming late.
Awesome. All right, so we have a quorum, so we are going to begin. Do we have to start with announcements? So, Joseph?
So two things. One, I wanted to thank everybody for all the hard work that they did on the open course evaluation stuff. There were a ton of people that participated and helped in the emails, and that really meant a lot and really made sure that this is going through. And if you're still interested in participating, now that we've passed the call to the committee, please let me know, drop me a message online, and I'll be happy to keep you in the loop on how that's going to keep going. Other than that, I wanted to give you guys some updates. So for a while, there hasn't been an undergraduate student rep on the Educational Policy Committee. This is a problem. We found out about this during the Resolution 16 study week conversation, so I volunteered to be that member, and I have a few updates for you guys. So we passed Resolution 8 on mental health and syllabi, which recommended that we add about two paragraphs, one about the different types of mental health services available at Cornell, and another one encouraging folks that are experiencing stress as a result of bias incidents to speak out to either the employer or their reporting system. We have a few pieces of feedback about that resolution. I'll forward those to Rebecca Fanger and Mandari. More generally, they're like about language and stuff, and it's about the actual text, but we're looking to get that to the faculty senate soon, so there's an update there. We've been talking about two issues related to testing policy. One of them is about evening prelims. So the idea is that right now there are way too many conflicts happening with evening prelims on Tuesdays and Thursdays at around 1 month into the semester. What David Delchamp, who is the chair of EPC, is going to be doing is inviting a bunch of different deans, different schools, and faculty to think about this proposal. Open up Mondays and Wednesdays with possibilities for prelims, and stop encouraging evening prelim scheduling that happens unofficially or happens in non-problem-solving classes. Professors should be giving tests in classes unless there are multiple sections or something else. We're going to be updating the faculty handbook to make sure that this is accurately reflected and that we don't have so much conflict in evening prelims. We're also going to be developing some more language about the faculty handbook testing during the last week of classes. So if anybody has any input about either of those two things, give a shout. So, final update about Resolution 16, which is about study week. So as you guys know, a process that students were involved in about 2 or 3 years ago generated a study week schedule that has overall less study time before exams start. We saw that this was an issue, we wrote a resolution and we passed it. We had a meeting with the educational, with folks that were on the calendar committee that were on EPC at the time. And it was clear that there are two ways to move forward now. One of them is to develop an understanding of how we want study weeks to change, how we want the planning of things like slow day happening on the day after the last day of classes, instead of on the last day of classes to change, what we think about a study day happening during the exams. So things like that are going to have to wait until about 2017 to change, so my senior year and the junior year, a bunch of folks on this body, but we encourage them to keep the conversation going. Yeah, the other option that we're going to be doing is we're investigating the placement of February break. So we're working with folks in Gannett on that as well. Other than that, if anybody has any questions on any of that, please let me know. But those are the issues we're talking about.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joseph. So we are going to move forward with the agenda. We have a lot that we can get done today. It doesn't necessarily mean that we should rush through everything and get all of it done today. A lot of this can wait until next semester, so I am going to ask that we prioritize resolutions where we have some people in the audience who are here to speak about them, because we don't want to waste their time either. So we are going to go right into Resolution 31, developing an international student union. So I guess, Siobhan, you can go up to the podium, and a couple of people from ISU maybe could come down to the front row. I'm sorry, this room is not perfect for multiple presenters, but there's lots of space, so we can use that to our advantage.
Okay.
I actually like one for you too. For this? Yes.
Are we good?
Oh. Okay. We should be good to go.
Okay. Cool.
You guys get 4 minutes to. Awesome.
So I'll just quickly start in the conversation about this. I just want to reemphasize this is a really important move for the organization, moving them from a board to a union that has more ability to do advocacy work and also opens up their ability to have a general body. I just want to address the biggest concern that I felt like was yesterday was that the old board elects the new board. I just want to reemphasize that I found it really problematic some of the statements that were being made yesterday for people looking at this organization for the first time. And thinking that there were issues with it. I don't think it's really your place to say how international students should be advocating for other international students. And I think that they've done, like I said, an exemplary job over the past 10 to 20, or about 16 years, however many years, as an organization. Their structure works. This is making an improvement that does increase the ability to have general body access, but also maintains the functional roles that very much should are.
Exciting.
I have a lot of ratings for that. I think I'll let them explain the resolution more technically, but I do think it's an important step for them, and I hope that people are on this board.
Yeah, just before that happens, I do want to thank everyone for their comments. I do understand that the purpose of this to come to the SA is that the members of the SA who have interacted with their constituents give their comments and, give their opinion on this matter. I think that's what happened yesterday, so I think that's a very healthy process. I would also urge us to discuss other topics related to the ISU resolution and not get fixated on one topic.
I just
want
to say
the speaker, so sorry. Sorry.
So if you guys are done, we are going to continue with the speakers list from yesterday. So if you raise your hand right now and you were on the speakers list yesterday, you will be on the second speakers list. So far, the only people on the speakers list for the first speakers list today are Director of Elections Aniket, Rep. Bekelia, and Rep. Johnson. If you don't remember what you had to say, then you can yield your time and we'll move into the second speakers list. If there's no one new, mark you on the second speakers list. First is DOE Aniket.
I would like to mention that some of the concerns raised yesterday about the internal elections of ISU can be genuine, but it is also possible to discuss these things ad nauseum and continue with this discussion forever. It is important to note that this body should be allowed to function according to the practices and conventions previously established. This is not the first organization that is being proposed to run like this. And as a recommendation for future consideration, I would advise the ISU to consider establishing different tiers of membership with their respective voting rights and responsibilities so that these concerns can be addressed in the future.
Next is Rep. Vakili.
So I really like this resolution. My family is from Canada.
to Siobhan. Just like be really clear where the ISD is and where the ISU is. And I think going forward, it is important that it is a new the ISD is forming into something different that you look into basically just I guess what we've seen is what the way ISD has run and health in the past decade shouldn't necessarily guide itself how it should be going forward. It really is a new organization, the ISU.
Yeah, so you guys get to respond after two people speak. And also for anyone in the audience, if you're not sponsoring a resolution but you would have something you would like to say, just raise your hand and we'll put you on the speakers list. So you guys get to respond.
So thank you for your comments, David. So I wanted to say that ISU was not necessarily, kind of a replication of ISD. The reason ISD was being formed is because there was no such organization in place bringing together all international students on campus before. And we decided to take the initiative because we were one of the, few active collaborative international organizations on campus. Siobhan came up to us and, we decided, okay, this is a good idea. Maybe we should start something in place for international students. So this whole branding question that you're bringing up, I mean, it's not valid just yet because the ISU hasn't been formed yet. It won't necessarily be like, just another chapter of the ISD or anything along those lines. It's something you're starting actively from scratch. It just happens to be that ISD and, working with Siobhan and members of the FDA has taken the initiative.
Great. Next is Rep. Johnston.
It's nice to meet you guys. It's been really good to see, your work that you've done, especially, through the Appropriations Committee, on your list. I guess I was just asking the same question that I've asked in the Appropriations Committee meeting, which is, after Siobhan is gone and there's a new, international rep, how are you ensure that they talk, the IFU and, the advocacy position and the international rep, which have, really similar roles of advocacy for the international community, how it works on institutional level?
So, in the new resolution that the improvements we made after listening to the ASCOM's advice and everything, in the roles of the officers, we added an ex-officio member, which will be the student assembly international rep, which will formalize the relationship between ISU and the SA, which is a part of the comment.
I think it's great that they created a position of VP of advocacy and other sees that position, and I think they have been working with different communities, different constituents on campus to further increase the dialogue between international students and those communities. I think one of the programs we were working on this semester was with the LGBTQ community in Haven. In that sense, I would come into the picture if ever they have any legislations that are required, if ever they feel that the SA is required to pass a resolution or a census body sort of comment on any issue, that's what my relationship with them would be.
So is there anyone else who would like to speak who hasn't had a chance to speak yet? Otherwise, I'm going to move into the second speakers list. BP Warshaw?
One question I have is, so in the implementation of the International Student Experience, how when do you think it will start, or how long of a process will it take, do you think, to be in?
So hopefully, if this gets passed, we can start, telling people more about it and really publicizing it next semester. We've already done a lot of events this semester and start telling people that ISD has planned to expand, that ISD wants to be a part of it. And we actually had a whole event where we got people to come and we asked them for their opinion about how, if ISD was to be formed, what they wanted to look like. So hopefully we get a start next semester, but it might not be quite solid, but it will be a lot of changes during that, internally and how we think they will work. But I think we hopefully by next year.
Call a question.
All right, so there's a call to question, there's a second, there's dissent. Okay, so you have 30 seconds to explain your dissent.
I still believe there are points of view, including mine, that have yet to be discussed, and some questions that have yet to be resolved.
Great, that was a perfect example of dissent. So that means we are going to vote. So student assembly members, if you are in favor of closing discussion on this resolution and voting on it now, please raise your hand. All right. If you are not in favor, if you would like to abstain. By a vote of 9-8-1, we are going to go into a vote on this. So if you would like to vote in favor of the ISU Resolution 31, please raise your hand or placard. If you are opposed, if you'd like to abstain, by a vote of 16-1-1, this does pass. Resolution 36. Okay. So there's been a motion to suspend the agenda to move Resolution 36, which is divestment from coal. No. I was going to ask if there's a second and if there's any dissent. So there's dissent. Emma, would you like to explain your dissent? Guys, this is going to move 20 times faster if we keep the side conversations to a minimum. Sure, you have 30 seconds.
That divestment resolution can't be just like put up so that they like they've been done in the past and there needs to be a substantial conversation. And I think that there needs to be a substantial conversation. And I think that's the most important thing on this agenda at the moment, to have a substantial conversation about.
Okay, so now that both sides have been raised, we are going to vote on whether to suspend the agenda. So if you vote yes, that means we will talk about divestment first, even though the sponsors are not present. If you would like to talk about it later, you would vote no.
What information?
Yes.
Who seconded the motion to suspend the agenda?
There has been no second.
So far, there's been no second, but I'm kind of waiting for someone to second it. So there is a second, there was dissent, now we can move into voting whether to suspend the agenda or not. If you are in favor of suspending the agenda and putting Resolution 36 first, please raise your hand. If you are opposed, please raise your hand. Can't vote twice. You're not raising your hand now. It's too late. All right. If you would like to abstain. All right. By a vote of 1-17-1, we are not suspending the agenda for Resolution 36 to go first.
Motion to suspend the agenda to move Resolution 33 first.
Second.
And can I explain?
Yeah, 30 seconds.
There are members in the audience that came to discuss Resolution 33. I don't think we should vote on it, but I think we should discuss it as new business first out of proof.
So is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are going to vote on whether to suspend the agenda. If you would like to suspend the agenda and move Resolution 33 to the top of the docket, please raise your hand or placard. We lost it. All right. If you would like to oppose, if you would like to abstain, by a vote of 16-1-1, we are going to move this first. So the Bill of Sponsors of Resolution 33 by Suspended Accountability, please come to the podium. Yeah, we'll be wrong. Then I missed someone in that camp.
Yeah, you
can.
Yeah. So
first, I'd like to say thank you to Dr. Renee Alexander, who's kind of come to speak to us in advance and also come to support us today. So Philip and I decided that we were going to write this resolution mainly because a lot of women, people of color, and members of the LGBTQ community experience different varieties of violence. And we believe that there needs to be a forum where the administration and the people who work really hard for us, for this community, should be, reinforced that. And Philip, talk to you a little bit more about why.
So having gone through the bias story process myself, I have found that many aspects of the administration have been proven to be victim blaming, and they may have hold their own bias presumptions about certain people themselves. However, when going through this process, there's no way in which for you to rate how you believe that these certain vestibules of the administration have handled this. So, in short, this administration is really making sure that it's really addressing biases that the administration can have towards groups of people in regards to bias in this.
Is that it?
The idea is to kind of bring forward a discussion, and we wanted to open the forum up to you guys to see if you have any feedback for us.
Great. So we are going to keep a speaker's list. I didn't see if you were raising your hand, so you need to raise it again. Awesome. All right. So first, we are going to start with Liaison Battaglia.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Rita. Thank you for the audience members who came up. I know this is probably whatever it may be, it's on Friday or Thursday. Two questions. First off, is there a provision to safeguard the privacy of someone who is self-reporting? For instance, say I went to the bias boarding and I'm communicating with the city, and is there a way to ensure that there's some sort of anonymization so that there's not people being how information being leaked, people who may not have access to it, should not have access to it. And second is, you're evaluating the Quail Police, the JA, et cetera. Has there been any look at how, there's been a review with the dean of interculture programs in the Office of Workplace Inclusion? Is there any idea of maybe taking your findings and also sending them back to the UPD, the JA, et cetera? Because a lot of those responses are set by policy 6.4.
But, we don't have a very long speakers list, so until we do, you can respond, everyone.
Okay, so, addressing your first question, we can do this by holding protecting people's anonymity. We do believe that we will not be sharing any personal information. We won't in any way be tagging this to a certain person. So, obviously, if it's a person who has been subjected to violence and own discretion to whom they wish to share with, but based on how we plan on doing it, as of right now, we do not plan on sharing any specific information about what individuals it's occurred to. In regards to the 6.4, I don't really think that this is that related to 6.4. It is related to 6.4 in the sense that it is similar to protected status harassment, but I don't think that it is within the parameters that are currently set.
Also, to add on to the issue of privacy. When we met with Dr. Alexander, we talked about how we wanted to increase the amount of students who know that if they come and report something, it will remain anonymous. And we want to kind of get that word out so we can see, we know that a lot of these things are happening, but we don't have a very high volume of reports. All of this, a lot of this is by word by mouth, things that we've heard from our, you know, community, from our constituencies. So what we want to do is make sure that people who want to report things like this know that it's safe and it's private for them to do things like this. And if they're going to submit a form, they don't have to write their name on it. There's nothing that says that we should associate, you know, Jane Doe with whatever report or form they need to fill out.
Okay, so next is Rep. Bacharach.
This is like awesome. I was wondering two things. One is like, what are the next steps to this review? Where do you see this? Where do you see this next step going? Where do you see the solution happen? What does this sound like to do after someone kind of submits or you get a few of these applications? You say, okay, there's a problem. Where are the next steps? And then I just have another comment. I feel like women, people of color, and members of LGBTQ, I'm in all kinds of bias on campus, and I'm wondering if you could also address that, because I think maybe it's not often as aggressive, but I know in the dorm you constantly are different types of bias. If you do, open that up to all types of bias, not just specifically just groups.
So as to what we want to do next, we've been in contact with we've been in contact with her, and she's given me the list of the IFC president, and we hope to create a forum, and probably in the spring semester, we hope to have discussions where she'll be telling me about how every single chapter of fraternity or sorority, they want to make sure that there are a certain number of events that all the people between each other and sororities have to go to. And we were talking about making these events as one of those required events for them to go to. Because in our discussions, we've learned that a lot of some of the incidents have been within the community. And working with our team and Allison would be a perfect way to kind of push back in that way. We want to kind of bring and to make sure that people are active. And if they witness something like this, that they step in. And one of the major campus will step in and say, hey, that's not okay. So it's really the next step that we want to do. We want to make sure that people know everything that they say to us is going to be confidential. Everything that they say to the university is going to be confidential. And that we want to increase the amount of communications we have about around issues of diversity. And I think it's a great idea to kind of take note of the fact that there's different
these three groups that were given to obviously these are the only factions in which factions are referred to. However, they are most common and most prevalent, and they do tend to be the most violent and the most aggressive at times. But you say microaggressions do occur at all after the campus as well as other forms of prevalence in the condition. But to be specifically where it happens to happen the most.
Motion to amend line 7 based on Representative Bacharach's comments to say, whereas students of diverse backgrounds, including but not limited to women, people of color, and members of the LGBTQ community.
So there's a motion.
Oh, it's new business. I'm sorry. I'll wait till it's business of the day, and then I'll make that motion.
Sure. All right. So there's a motion to make it business of the day. There's been a second. Technically, you could amend to make it new business. It's to do that if it isn't argumentative in nature, so for future reference. So there was a motion on the floor. There is a second. Is there any dissent to this motion? Her motion to amend. You have to do one motion before you close another, and since technically we can fulfill the first motion, we're just going to do it, and I'm going to assume that your motion is withdrawn, Lindsay. And we can address it if you don't want to withdraw it after this. And then let's continue. If you would like to motion to amend to make Juliana's amendment happen, please raise your hand or placard. Chelsea, did you get it?
No. I'll show you.
Repeat. Yeah. Repeat it before we vote. Yeah.
Line 7, whereas students of diverse backgrounds, including but not limited to women, people of color, and members of the LGBTQ+ community are often subjected to bias incidents on campus.
All right. So now that we know what we're voting on, if you still would like to vote in favor of this motion, please raise your hand or placard. All right. If you are opposed, if you would like to abstain. All right, so by a vote of 18-0, we did amend it. Lindsay, do you still want to motion to move this to business of the day?
Sure.
Do we have to approve the amendment?
What?
Do we have to approve? Do we have to approve the amendment after motion to amend? Like, do we have to vote? Because we're in discussion on the amendment right now.
No. No one dissented, so we went right into the voting on the amendment. So if you would like to move it to business of the day, is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent to moving it to business of the day? Seeing none, we can vote on whether to move this to business of the day. If you would like to move this to business of the day, please raise your hand or placard. If you're opposed, if you'd like to abstain, by a vote of 19-0, we are moving this to be a business of the day. Next on our speakers list is Representative Zhao. And it is getting a little bit longer, guys, so I am going to ask that you guys wait for every two to respond. And now for Representative Kaufman.
Just really quickly, can you define what you mean by bias and biased? So I have more of an idea.
Well, I guess bias is, I guess, creating a decision against someone because of the group in which they belong to. And a biased incident is, I guess, the act of actually doing so in a prejudicial manner. For example, meeting someone on the stairs at RPCC because they're gay is a biased incident.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Great. So next is BP Payal.
I think this is a great resolution and very hardworking of both Philip and Diana, and I'm sure the third person. I just had one point. I know this is being very icky, but I do think that this could impact the language of this resolution. It says those subjected to biased incidents be asked to complete a form on their own violation. It should be asked means that they will have to do the form. It should be more like they have the ability, they have the option to.
Be asked. Putting the volition there is so that if they don't want to do it, it's completely okay. And it's only if they think that they've experienced something and they want to report it that they have to report it. Or that they can choose to report it. It's on their own volition.
Does this language represent that?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Remember, we're keeping it to two. It's okay. Rep to Keeley.
That would help for me
So I think that would be something of how to give examples or maybe for me, Tapestry is really enlightening theater production. So the other thing I wanted to mention is, you mentioned that one of the goals of it is to increase the responses you submitted. What is the current statistic of how many people submit bias incidents on the website or via the office of the ombudsman?
Do you guys want to defer?
Yeah.
I think we have some people who might know the answer.
Yeah.
Sure. I can help answer that. My name is Victor Young. I'm social director for the pre-freshman summer program as well as the president's special program coordinator for the Motorola Center. So I'm the co-chair of the bias seminar. And at this particular point, as we create more awareness in trying to build trust in our system, I think we are seeing more bias incidents, ideas or questions or things reported on a very frequent basis. But it's really about creating the awareness of the student population. And that's where we are right now. We can really use your support in trying to create additional awareness. But as of today, I would say we meet every Wednesday, and actually we may handle 1 to 2 cases. Some will be more involved than others. But as we continue to work with all the right constituents and really try to work through the individual cases and close the loop and have the right parties involved, from CUPD, the Gannett, our department, Renee's department, Dean of Students, and JA's office, we're all sitting at the table and strategically looking at the bias reports. And there's a human element behind each one of them. So we're trying to create a human element behind the scenes to say that each case is handled on an individual basis. So unfortunately, our numbers are still low, but creating the awareness and having this form of education is also creating awareness.
Is there anything else you want to say about, you know, how BART works before we continue with the discussion? Because I think that might be helpful for everyone here. Rena, you can add in.
To continue his comments, they review a number of cases a week, and they are farmed out depending on the type of bias incident that it is. If it's between a faculty member and a student, it goes to a certain direction. I get involved if it's a racially biased case. I have assigned cases, or I have been last year and a half or so, where there have been disparaging remarks, comments made around issues of race, class, and AJ gave a report. And so the bias report comes through the BART system, it's referred to the JA, and then I get involved. I am called into, in lieu of community service, I'm invited in to work with the student and show him or her, expose him or her to different communities so that they learn more about difference instead of going to paint a building or clean up a park. So we actually give them applied experience working with communities that they otherwise would have never had any contact with.
Great. Do you have anything else to add, Victor?
Yeah, one last thing. We were still working on the restorative justice component to the bias response piece, which is very important, so that where both entities are known and are applicable, we try to facilitate that conversation in a very productive way so people can see the impact of their issues and the impact of what they've done or said in front of an individual, so that that opportunity of hearing that voice that has been silenced is an opportunity to at least share their perspective with the person or perpetrator, if you will. So that's a part that we're still working on, and we're trying to make sure that's integrated into our biases.
May I have one more comment?
Sure.
What you are doing, I think, is very noteworthy because you are trying to elevate the system so more people know about it and more people will use it. And we can't resolve these issues if they're not reported. You can report them confidentially. However, there is a diversity education piece that's critically important because if we don't teach people to learn about each other across difference, we're not going to reduce the number of biases. We'd like to put the bias response system out of business, quite frankly. But in order to do that, Sylvia Hurtado called it diversity skills and knowledge, where we need to learn more about each other from each other and looking, in my view, at the first-year experience, and that's something that you all can help me do. What can we be doing more of as students arrive to Cornell to help them navigate these differences so that things don't elevate to the point of a bias? Okay?
Great. So we will continue with our speakers list from there. Do you guys want to finish up what you were saying? Okay. Great. Next is EVP Batista.
My question for you is just, can you explain a little bit more about what the form looks like? When you have a chance to talk about that. And I'm going to yield the rest of my time to Rep. Check. So I just want to know how this is going to fit into the structures of the CD and if you guys have been collaborating on that. Yeah, you have my time.
Okay. So I was wondering how are you guys going to select the members of the subgroup, because I know it's part of the CD. And will you choose some members from the CD, or are you guys going to have like applications? I don't know how that's going to work. And how are you going to ask like community or advertise it? Because I know a lot of people don't know about the bias reporting system, because it was brought up in my CD. And what are you guys going to do different from my like, previous years?
Okay, so I can take that last part of the question about like what we're doing. So as I started saying earlier, next semester we're really hoping to have something similar to what Dominique had done, just Black Tea with a sexual assault learner. And we're trying to have something where you can go and speak and have like an open microphone forum report, which we're going to be working with the Greek Life and all three types of Greek Life, and we're going to work with, you know, like we're going to work with Dr. Alexander to see what we can shoot up to in order to kind of have a very inclusive and safe environment for people to come and for us to make them aware of bias incidents themselves and what they should do if they're in situations of bias incidents and how to future prevent. For example, like what she was talking about with the increasing awareness among first years in particular, we have an incoming group of students. And in January, on January 19th, I'll be there speaking on behalf of ESA and on behalf of the transfer community. And it'll be a great opportunity for kind of, like, they're the next group of new students. So it'll be great. I can just kind of start talking to them then. There will be other ESA members, and the young coach is going to be very well. So we're just trying to start somewhere. And forum is probably the best way to do it.
And then regarding the first question, regarding how the forum will look like, and as well as regarding how CD will handle it and how members will be chosen. So regarding the form, I think it's important to remember that this is a recommendation. So therefore, since this resolution is a recommendation, we don't know exactly how the form will look like, but if you have been in contact with the various offices that are listed here, we do plan on working with them to create a form that is unbiased itself, and that will be helpful and in order to move forward and improve the way the system currently functions. And regards to how members are currently being chosen, we do have a subgroup, as you obviously know, that is dedicated to bias itself. And I do anticipate that everyone who is interested in doing so would have to be a part of it while we do work with the administrative panel.
One more question, like, what is like members outside of the CD that want to be part of it?
I think we could definitely accommodate that.
Yeah.
I think we want as many hands on board as we can possibly get. And so the idea is not too large, of course, so that it will be very effective, especially since this is just starting out. But the idea is to make sure that, you know, like we want different people part of different communities to kind of be in on this task force of sorts. And so that they can go back and tell their friends about what we're doing here and what they're doing and kind of start a network at first through word of mouth. And then as that happens, to have a forum. Kind of reach other people.
Next is Secretariat Murphy.
Real quick, from like a more practical standpoint, when in the process would the form be triggered to be offered to this person? Because I feel like you can miss a lot of people catching their opinion because they don't even get to a certain point in the process where, you know, people might even go to the website and see that how much information they have to put in and not, and that would be to capture that personal information so they even start the bias process, you know? So, I mean, maybe just making a suggestion about it being a public forum or something that anyone, you know, you don't have to necessarily be in the bias process, the bar process to fill it out.
Next is Rep. Lisa Liu.
Hi guys, thank you guys so much for coming to the meeting of the resolution by coming out on the floor, but also for our administrators for being here and really supporting this idea, because I think it's fantastic. But I, along with
volunteer work on the restorative justice model for the bias response system, and in doing so learn a lot about the structure of the university, how it looks in terms of bias reporting. And I guess knowing all of that, I have a lot of questions. And first, I guess I just want to focus on your resolve clauses or your resolution. So I saw in the first, on line 27, that this is a voluntary task to fill out forms. And in my experience talking with one of the university diversity officers, Ms. Chappelle Williams, she had told me in fall of 2013 that there were maybe about 75 incidents at the time that we asked her what the numbers looked like. So this by no means includes the amount of people who experienced a bias incident. And echoing what our administrators have said, I guess my first question is this process really looking to increase the number of people to use the bias reporting system, or is it really a process just to change the reporting system itself? And I guess as a follow-up question, you guys please correct me if I'm wrong, it basically sounds like this is an investigation to enhance the bias response system and how to best improve it. And my second question is goes off of Rep. Chappelle's comment, and I really want to just echo the statement. And I'm also really glad to hear that the system in place already has something to provide privacy, but I also really urge you guys to look into some sort of written statement or at least a more formalized way that's put into the system to provide feedback to make it to assure privacy for whoever does decide to use the system. And then I guess third of all, looking at your resolve clauses, there really was no timeline. So I'm wondering when you guys are planning to implement this and whether this will be on the formal website. So partnering or talking with the IT department as well.
That was a lot of questions, so you guys can answer right now.
Okay, so basically, in terms of whether an investigation to eventually perhaps change the way that bias reporting process is handled, that may ultimately be the case, but since this is just the initial investigation, we'll be seeing how it's handled so far. So I guess, essentially, yes, it is an investigation of sorts. In regards to whether or not this will increase the amount of people using the bias reporting system, I would say yes, it will, because by creating this new structure and by creating all of this, it creates awareness of itself, just by the fact that it exists, but there's the bias reporting system exists, and I feel like it would give students more faith in the bias reporting system because they know exactly how things are handled, because I know that right now, the bias reporting system, although it is well structured, it's not that well known by students how exactly it is handled.
And I really like your idea about having a written statement for privacy. I think that's really important, and we definitely work with IT in the coming future to kind of talk to them and make sure that the form, the amended form of sorts, is on their website, and students are one click away from accessing it. So for the third question, do you guys have an idea of a timeline for what the new issue is one click away? I think the idea is to have the committee starting at the beginning of next semester, obviously, and then after they're done gathering data, and after we kind of talked to a few more, and that's when they were so after we talked to IT, at that point we'd really like to kind of set down whatever amended form that we have at that point and get it out by the end of the year, hopefully. If everything can work that quickly, that'd be great, because we want everything to happen as soon as possible. Thank you.
Awesome. VP Stefanko.
Hey.
VP Bhandari.
So I have a question with regards to the first be at their resolve clause. So I understand that you guys are going to kind of be evaluating some of the administration's handling of these cases. But I just had a personal experience. I was once reporting a bias incident, and it was kind of confusing reaching out to different departments of the school to just try to figure out who to reach out to. And I think that's another hindrance for a lot of people, because they don't know what the appropriate party to contact is. And a lot of the times, the places that you'll call, if you call some ear or something, I called CAPS, and they actually were rather unsure about where to go to report this, and it was very like complicated and really. If I wasn't even the one who was a victim of the situation, but I can't even imagine someone having to go through that and also be the victim. So I was wondering if your resolution would do anything in terms of assessing like the reporting process itself, and if you could potentially incorporate that into the form that the students would have to fill out, you know, the opt-in form.
Next is Rep Check.
Oh,
you peeled, then Rep Yang.
So in regards to the form and all of the confidentiality issues and also the written statements, BARC uses a very similar, we use a very similar anonymous form to ensure that people applying for the Student Healthy Students Fund don't have their names or anything regarding them or released. Anyone, if you want, I can give you a copy of that.
Okay, so I guess, I think that's a great idea in response to the confidentiality, but in regards to how that works, I feel like that would be helpful to assess how that works in regards to terms of financial aid and see if we can take certain aspects of that and apply it to the bias reporting system. And in regard to the audience question about who to reach out to, I'm just confused whether or not you mean who you should reach out to when reporting the incident.
Mm-hmm. Can I clarify?
Yes.
So I think part of it is just like a lot of students struggle with like figuring out how to report it. So is that like going to be incorporated and maybe some type of evaluation of that process?
Absolutely. So actually, when we were talking to the third person sponsoring this resolution, part of what he mentioned is actually exactly what you're concerned with. And that's why in the language, perhaps this can be clarified, is if when we say like evaluate the university and administration's handling of the case, I think that entails like the entire process itself and it all comes together. But I think we can talk about that too if it makes
sense. Awesome. So we've expired the current speakers list. Yes, pizza is coming. Don't get distracted. If you would like to be on the speakers list, meaning you haven't talked yet, let me know. Otherwise, I'm moving into the second right now.
Motion to call the question.
There's a motion to call the question. There's been a second. There's been dissent. Do you have a question? No? Okay. So if there's dissent, I will give you 30 seconds to explain it, and then we'll vote to vote.
I think there's things that could be added to this that could be really beneficial and could actually help with a lot of outcome.
Great. So now we're going to vote to vote. So if you would like to vote on this, if you want to vote, say yes. If you don't want to vote and you want to continue discussion, say no. Okay? So if you would like to approve, please raise your placard or hand.
This is a vote to vote.
Okay. If you vote yes, we are ending discussion. If you vote no, we are not ending discussion. If you would like to continue discussion and vote no, please raise your hand. Is that a hand? Awesome. If you would like to abstain. All right, by a vote of 10-8-1, we are going to vote. So, if you would like to vote yes on this resolution as it stands, please raise your hand or placard. If you oppose, right, we'll do that. Yep. If you'd like to abstain, yeah. And now we can do community vote. So ex officio or community members who are here can vote on this, and two votes will be taken from whatever the majority is. So if you are in favor of this, if you are not, if you'd like to abstain, by a vote of 3-0-1, that means that the two community votes are going towards the total, which means that the total vote is 21-0-1, and this passes. All right, so we are going to continue. Thank you so much for coming. We are going to continue on with the agenda. I'm guessing Brian left because the pizza's here, and when the pizza comes, we'll take a little bit of a break. Who has to leave this room by 4:30?
4:40.
I'm trying to figure out how long we can stay because we do need to do the internal election. So who needs to leave by 4:45?
At 4:45, I need to be out again.
Okay, so one person needs to leave by 4:45. When do you need to leave?
4:20.
That's by 4:45. Okay, so we are going to continue on until about then, unless you want to run for a position, and then we'll figure something out. Okay, so we're going to try to end, to wrap everything up by like 4:20, and then go into voting on the internal positions. How does that sound to everyone? Great.
Yeah.
So, Juliana and David, you want to start?
Yep. Okay, so we realized we tried to commit, probably to something that we voted on. Last year, especially because we barely have a form to vote on a charter change. Since it is still new business, and we did have liaisons having a contact us last night, which we really appreciate. We'd like to make an amendment to 960, even if we think we find it pretty like non-controversial. After it says majority whether to hold a referendum period, the vote will also make the provision for 2+ community votes. And that's because on 922, this is our launching degree is an action to be body, not just the essay. So we think that it is important to include community on that vote. So we'll actually vote on that. We would like, we want to ask people not to table this right away. We want to get some feedback on it going into winter break and then really be able to flush data next month.
Yeah. So that was a formal amendment?
Yes, that was a formal amendment.
I'll give you that.
Sure. On my 60, or on my 61, after hold the referendum period, we're adding, the vote will also make the provision for 2+ community votes.
Second.
So there's an amendment on the floor. There's a second. We can move into discussion on this amendment. Is there anyone who has anything to say? Is there anyone who has any motion?
Motion to approve the amendment.
Awesome. So there's been a motion to approve the amendment. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, I'm going to ask if you approve this amendment by unanimous consent. Seems like everyone is consenting. Is there any dissent to that? Seeing none, we will approve this by unanimous consent. Would you like to continue? You still have a couple minutes.
We stated everything yesterday. That's where we left off. We really want to open up the discussion. So, yeah, feel free to question.
What is going on? What?
Are we in like regular? Business of the day.
It's business of the day because this was there yesterday. If you want to be on the speaker's list, you really need to raise your hand high because I know that there's a lot of people who want to speak. We're starting off with Henderson.
So I think I said these same things in CLT. I don't think there's any value in having four different four different times where these referenda can be voted on, because I think turnout would be very, very low in like November and April. So like as opposed to existing elections for like the 30 members or the members in the fall and the spring, I think you can get like substantial turnout, like 20, maybe like 20 or 30%, whereas it might be like 5% on those off months. So that's like one thing. And then I think there are some clarity concerns. I know it's always been called a referenda, but I think like a poll would be more fitting since it is like meant for opinion rather than like legislative matters, because referenda kind of implies like state legal procedures where like if it's approved, like if the public vote on it and it's approved, it becomes law. So I think those are my two biggest concerns with the timeline and the name.
Yeah, sure. So just addressing the second point, do you really want to call it a referenda to give more substantive meaning to it? That's what our peer institutions call it. Cornell doesn't actually pass state government laws, so we don't really want to get into that discussion of what supports the law and what's affirmative. But seeing that this is modeled off our peer institutions, they call it a referendum process, that's why we called it I definitely do see how it's likely that the referendum process during the elections will garner more votes. There's a couple of things I like to bring up. The first was that we really saw this as a compromise between people who wanted the referendum process to be submitted at any time across the year. Some of our institutions have that, even the University of Chicago has that. So we just thought it was a compromise. People who wanted it during elections and people submitted during any time of the year. Another reason is that this elections are at the beginning of the semester, and this gives more time for people if they're they're busy at the time to submit a referenda. The third argument is that our elections don't have the greatest turnout. That's something like we repeatedly talked about. We have about a third of students vote during our election. So we think a referenda and elections process could work together towards increasing turnout. And if it's during September or February election, that's great. But we also think there should be more time during the year for people to submit a referenda.
Just quickly out on that, just like to bring that to the floor and like the answer to decide on that, I think we stand on different sides. Also, we're going to be noting what percentage of the student body votes, and that kind of gives backup or not backup to whatever the decision is.
Sweet. Next on the agenda, on the speakers list is Topanko.
Yeah, so I completely have mapped a lot of the things I wanted to say. I think it's really problematic having it twice during a semester. I think it's like, especially during the elections, it provides some sort of like random sample of some sorts, right? You're not getting a super biased poll or whatever, but it's like, I feel like having in the middle of the semester, going out and then having groups try to, do this thing, like equivalent to like having a poll on like Fox News on like whether or not, somebody, whether or not, you like guns, right? And it's going to have 95% of the people say they like guns and, things like that. You're taking a very biased, a biased sample when it's during the middle of the semester, because the people that are going to be encouraging, you to vote are going to be the people that are generally in favor of whatever is happening. And then also on the poll versus referendum thing, I couldn't agree more. I think I think it should be called like a poll or something. I mean, just because other institutions do it, that's not a very persuasive reason why, at least for the name for me. I think that if referendum is understood that it implies some sort of action, especially because that's the way state and national governments do it, at least in a lot of ways. And so I think that those two changes need to be made for me to want to vote on this.
Awesome. Rep. Caglia?
I just have one question and actually do you want to start? For instance, say someone were to start at the beginning of the year trying to create signatures and they didn't get enough, and they purchased, I consider that someone will first get like 400, they can't get enough signatures, so they could hold it the entire year. So my question would be, would you want to have a deadline, for instance, for the second students who have, like, you get it, and whoever appears to take out your positions who get the signatures have to within the first Tuesday for the September period or the November period. Because my concern is someone will, a group that has something that's very much dragging along is going to get 100 signatures per semester, and they're going to start trying to drag it off throughout the entire year, or maybe even a multi-year process, so I have a cap on it, sit there and start soliciting signatures.
I would say that I don't see that as much of a problem. The question, we noted that it's not going to change. So if you sign to it, you sign to it, and if you get the amount of signatures, I don't see why there can't be an impression. The only thing that I would see a problem with is that if there are current student signatures, not current student signatures on the sheet, but I know that we're going to have a process in which we'll check all the signatures.
Yeah, in regards to I just wanted to emphasize that, like, current elections, again, if there is a student's body vote, I would say what we do is try to make it the least biased, and that we send an email to every student, and it reaches out to everyone, and we send a monthly newsletter to every student, and that's where we've advertised and discussed, and we call for statements of pros and cons beforehand, so that they would be on that referendum ballot. So really ask yourself, you know, is a third of the students in the current election, is that enough for the opinion for a referendum? It's hard to say, but the important thing is that the process is there where every student will be emailed, and in that sense, it won't be biased.
You want the highest turnout, but the voting period is exactly 24 hours. Especially if you're trying to wrangle support, I would maybe suggest that you increase that to maybe 72 or longer to try and get support. Also, with taking back into the voting period, to my knowledge, the essay elections are longer than 24-hour voting periods.
Do you guys want to respond to that now?
Yes, yeah, sure. So that's actually
So there's a motion to amend on the floor. Is there a second? Chelsea, did you get that? All right, so there's a second. Now we can go into discussion on this amendment. Does anyone want to? Okay, so there's a motion to vote on the amendment. Is there a second? Dissent?
Cool.
All right, what's your dissent?
I just want to discuss it really quickly.
Okay, so now, actually, the way this works is because it's... Oh, I guess we can vote to vote for you. Okay, so we are going to vote if someone seconds it. Did someone second it?
Yeah.
Okay, so, Siobhan, you can't ask questions in the middle of a motion. Thank you. We are going to continue with the vote to vote. One thing at a time, one motion at a time. We all know these rules. We've been here for an entire semester. If you are in favor of closing discussion on the amendment, please raise your placard. Closing discussion on the amendment means that we will vote on it. If you would like to continue discussing this amendment, you're not ready to vote on it yet, please raise your flag. If you would like to abstain. Okay, so by a vote of 11-6-0, we are going to go right into a vote. Before we vote, what's your question?
My question was, is the voting period for the election 36 hours?
Okay, so...
I would ask you to extend it more than that.
All right, so for something like that, you should have been on the speaker's list. All right, I thought it was about the motion. So we're going to move on into voting on this. So if you are in favor of this amendment as it is, please raise your hand or placard. Yes.
If we approve the amendment, how many votes do we need to change the amendment?
Two-thirds.
Yeah. So it would be two-thirds. So if you're not happy with 36 hours, you should vote no. and then you can propose another amendment. Does that make sense? Awesome. So if you're in favor of this amendment, we're looking for a majority. Please raise your hand. All right. If you are opposed. If you'd like to abstain. I can't see you when you do that. Okay. By a vote of 14-1-2, the amendment does pass. So now we can move back into the session on the resolution as a whole. Next on the speaker's list is Rep. Yang.
Okay, so I mean, the reason why I dissented on the last one was that I don't think it should have been 36, 34, 36. Again, Rep. Tagliatelle mentioned that it should be a little bit longer. I mean, 36 hours would just include time I'm sleeping as well, really. It's not that long. 2 days, 48, 72 hours. That's more reasonable for people to reach out and for things to spread.
I would just bounce back and say that the link for election period, do you think people had enough time to vote during that?
All right, we're moving on. Next is Rep. Titcom. Yeah, guys, so we already voted on the amendment. What's done is done. You can vote to change it, but it would take 2/3. And we're just talking about the resolution as a whole right now.
Okay. So one thing that I seem to have an issue with, and maybe you could show your rationale more. So I know that you said that you can collect the information via electronic source, which is that as long as the record is the first name, last name, and ID. But the only thing I find problematic about that is that if I wanted to get everyone's first name, last name, and then ID, just because it's available online on the point of Google search. So therefore, I as an individual could just pretend that I can wonder this. I could say Jordan was down for it, which really wasn't. But there's no way to really check that, so that's why I would maybe consider doing something similar to the election where you need your student ID number. Your student ID number is not available online while your net ID is.
All right, so what?
Motion to amend.
You have the formal language for that? All right, well, there is a motion on the floor. I'm just wondering exactly what the motion is. All right, well, there's actually not really a motion yet, so. Okay, so it's. Lauren, could you repeat that loud and clear? Okay. Is this about this? Sure. All right, so there's a motion to amend on the floor. Chelsea, do you have it?
Can everyone please just be quiet? Like, we're trying to get through this effectively, and, like, all the time conversation is not helping, and it's really disrespectful to people that are making amendments.
Thank you for doing that, Lauren. Is there a second so that we can go into discussion?
Second.
There's a second. Now we can discuss. Brian is first on the speaker's list for the amendment, so Brian goes first.
So the office has consulted with all the appropriate people, and the office president would flat out reject something like this if it has the ID number. That's level 2 classified information, which means it can't be, I don't know, the university has anything fancy. It basically, like, level 1 is, like, social security numbers and things like that. Level 2 is student ID number. And anything, you know, really the only thing that the office can process that's level 2 is the electronic forms, because we have to go through a whole special process. That's the registrar. And this whole initiative would fall flat in space if you guys did that. Just put that out there. One thing that we could do, the office could do, in support of a net ID only system, I mean, of course, like, once
you guys pass this recommendation, or is it a charter change? Legislation? Once it goes out, the president needs to get an email and be like, do you guys think this is a good thing or not? And we're going to be like, no, or we're going to be like, yeah. But
as of right now,
I think it's good because what we can do is we can set up a system where the verification process that we can implement would probably be something like, the way that we verify election petitions right now is we randomly select a certain amount of people on there and verify all their credentials. And we could do that with this in the sense of that we would verify the whole thing. That's why we had that electronic form. And it's actually pretty difficult to fabricate, like a lot of student IDs or a lot of student IDs if you're just trying to like find them randomly online. I mean, yeah, you could do that, but that's really the only way to do it. In the future, what we would like to do when we have more sound IT infrastructure would be to set up a Kerberos authenticated system that would let you do it automatically when you sign up an ID and there's verification that way, but that's not within the scope of what the ID or the office company support right now. So I think that from our perspective, we think that the sponsors have put a lot of thought into the process and we are in support of the way that it works.
Okay, so next on the speakers list for the amendment is Lisa.
Sorry,
you want to be on the regular speakers list? You can motion to vote on this amendment. Okay, so there's a motion to vote on the amendment. Is there any dissent? You would only dissent if you want to really continue discussion on this or something like that. So was that a confident dissent? I don't even know who said it. Dissent or second? Okay. Is there any dissent? Great. There's no dissent. So we are going to vote on this. If you vote yes, that means the amendment goes through. If you vote no, the amendment does not go through. Who is in favor? Raise your hand and clap.
One.
Two. Okay. Who is opposed? What? Who would like to abstain? All right, so by a vote of 2-16-1, Lauren's motion to approve this amendment fails.
Motion to take a break for food.
Okay, so there's a motion to take a break for food. Second. I'm going to approve that. Yes?
I just want to say bye to everyone.
Bye, Chris.
Bye,
Chris. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a break so that everyone can eat, and then we'll come back. So we're recording. We're going to continue where we left off in our meeting. Juliana and David are still up there presenting their resolution. The first person on the speakers list is Emma.
I really like the resolution, and I want to thank you for coming to me specifically when we talked about it beforehand. So the things that I have is, first of all, I think that the name is Call a poll is kind of like to say, like, we're taking your opinion into account, but we're not going to change anything as a result. And I think that's kind of like a slap in the face to like the entire body. Like, I think that's a strong word. But I don't know. It's just like this could really be like a chance to like give people a vote on something like directly. And like, of course, like anything fast, like it doesn't have to work and go into law. And like, you really don't have that authority. But like, it kind of makes them feel a little more empowered. And I think that would also speak to like how many people got to vote for these things. The other thing is that if issues arise like in the middle of the semester, having it offered more than once in the semester would give students more opportunities to like bring issues forward. So I think that having four in the year is really good. So there's also like ways that you can mitigate the fact that like it might take like more to like the extreme ends of the like bell curve or whatever, like to feel like the mushroom deal, you could have like events that told people about what the rest of it was about.
we maybe could like think about how we can guide within like the like frame of the resolution, like holding events that like helps people with the issue, it's not just like people coming together like that are really strong for an issue. And even if they are, like that's a question too, like 46 people like pushing for something to do it. Another thing that someone pointed out to me is that most of our voting happens in the first 24 hours of elections anyway, so keeping it
10 seconds. I'm going to ask you guys, wait.
Mm-hmm.
Next is VP Bhandari.
So I had a question about, like, if there would be any type of, I don't want to say censoring, but, like, I think that there's room for potentially very controversial questions to come up in terms of a referendum, like people submitting it. I mean, just to give an anecdote, last year we had a rather controversial resolution that came from the student assembly, which kind of resulted in some conversations that I thought were not as productive as could have been. So I was just wondering, if there would be any process for ensuring that the questions were fair and, you know, healthy discussion for the Cordell community.
Yeah, the censor of student body, that's why, or the student assembly, that's why we vote on a question against that certain threshold statement.
And do you want to address Emma's?
Great sentiment, Mr. Gurdy.
Awesome. Next is Secretariat Murphy. Cool. Next is Lisa Liu.
To go off of that Johnson's point, in addition to holding some sort of like event for each thing that people are voting on, maybe locally that discussion during the event. That way you want to lay out like presentation style that you could really actually engage in what's best for a team for next whatever they're thinking about. And that can lead to students wanting to write a pro and con statements online as well. And I guess like my other question was, you guys mentioned how you research how this model works at other universities. So I'm wondering what you found in your research, how the system actually works at other schools, like how many people use it, and like whether the process calls for mostly like one type of opinion, such as like national political issues, or like what will be things that people are actually voting on for, like.
Wait 1 second for Rep. Brown.
You might have already talked about this in the introduction when I wasn't here, but do you have some example of like a past referendum?
Yeah, so just quickly just that like example of past referenda at Cornell was should we create a $5 renewable energy fund and then follow up with like should that be mandatory? Example at another institution was investment from fossil fuels, should they invest yes or no?
A good example of something that we could have used before this past semester is should we have even our parking in college now? And that would have been another great way for us to make our decisions because we're like, how are we going to get student opinion? And that would have been a really good example to talk to. And if you think about that, that just came up in the middle of the semester and that would have been perfect for a November sort of referendum.
Yeah. We found at Yale is that the referendum process, they implemented it like we're doing with their referenda idea, and thought that should be separated. Like they got some sort of bad feedback on that because they thought it should be neutral of any referendum. You're just implementing the process. In regards to the institutions we looked at, it was as I mentioned, Harvard, Yale, University of Chicago. They all have similar, pretty much what we have here, just different numbers to reflect that we're a much bigger institution than Harvard, Yale.
So that actually expired our current speakers list.
Motion to table to our first meeting in the spring.
So there's been a motion to table until our first meeting in the spring semester. There's been a second.
Point of information, would we have enough people to vote on it today?
So we have 17 right now, and
so
I think we need 2/3 of 25. Which
we have.
No, I can't do it in my head.
17. Like
it's 17?
Right. Yeah.
You need it.
Yeah. So I think it would be better to motion to table it next semester's first meeting.
All right. So we are going to table it. If there's no dissent, is there any dissent? Seeing none, we can vote to table it. If you would like to table this until next meeting, please raise your hand or placard. If you would like to abstain, so by a vote of 17-0-0, this will be the first thing on our agenda next semester.
And if you have any concerns about it over which breaks, please bring that up to us. We really want this to be straight on top.
Thank you.
Awesome. So now we can continue on with our current agenda. We just did Resolution 32. We already voted on Resolution 33, which means that we're on to Resolution 34. What happened to Resolution 35? It didn't pass.
Motion to suspend the agenda and move on to the resolution that on coal divestment, since there are members of the audience here for that.
Second.
Is there any dissent to that?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Seeing none, we'll just go directly into a vote. If you're in favor of suspending the rules, please raise your hand or placard. All right, so if you oppose, if you'd like to abstain, by a 17-0-0 vote, you guys can come up and present Resolution 36.
Are there two more?
Well, it's just the majority of the most things, but not a charge. Like, you could approve it, it's not a charge. It's just down to the charge. The quorum is 13. So we're good right now.
New business. All right, Rep. Sal?
Hey guys. We know this is just new business. I think that this is something that's pretty straightforward. It does not do anything detrimental. We're not like asking for any kind of investment or divestment from coal because we already have no investment in it. And I think that this kind of provides like the breeding ground for like, the next step. So like, right now, we're already saying that Cornell is not invested and will not be invested in coal. We're kind of set the precedent for like what we can achieve 1 year from now, 5 years, 10 years.
Next is Rep. Henderson, D.P. Henderson.
Yeah, did you guys have like conversations with either like the investment office or other like relevant people with respect to like future investments? In coal and like whether how long that's been true and if it like will foreseeably be true.
So not recently, but we sat in on like the trustee office investment like last spring, and they did say that they would
not investing goals, and it's not, it's not a financially viable investment anymore. Within like the past 40 years, there's been a 58% decrease in the value of coal. So it's just not a smart investment. I don't think it's something we'll do unless it's something dramatically changes like processing of it or making cheaper, but I don't think that they would put the effort for it. Like, investing in something they're already not invested in, what is better?
Great. DP workshop?
So in the media filing at results clause, we talk about how Cornell achieved carbon neutrality in focus later than the year 2035. I find that kind of misleading because at least with the classes that I've been taking and professors and hearing things, like, I don't think that number is accurate. Like, I don't think Cornell will be able to do it by 2035. I don't know, maybe could possibly be like potentially 2035. I don't
know. Do you want that? Yeah. So the Cornell Sustainability Office, like, says that 2035 is the year that they'll be carbon neutral by, and the president of the university is like the chair of that essentially, who's like part of it. So that's the number that he's publicly saying. That's just like the number that we'll be on. It is like when they explain it more, they do like propose it as a goal, and they don't say like we for sure for a fact are going to be carbon neutral by 2035. But I think that like it kind of weakens it to like change the wording, especially if that wording that they're comfortable with using, like I have faith that like we should be using it.
Rep Pitt Tom.
Thank you.
Battaglia.
First off, thanks for coming out. It's always a hard day, so I forget to come out and talk. But I appreciate the effort. My one concern and my one question would be, actually, first off, from this point, President Ford has unequivocally stated the goal is 2035. It's like 2050 was a goal. The goal, our university officially at the line is 2035. So that's the way we basically have to ask them that when they came to talk to us. My question would be, if coming down and says that line 24 addresses from all direct holdings and commingled funds in the fossil fuel industry, this is the same question and slash issue I brought up last year when we did talk to steps divestment both the SA and the UA, that the financial, there's a limited bottom line at the university. We all know that. We have to prioritize projects. Well, they're all sustainability, and I might work with you on it, it's going very important. My top priority, I think the top priority of most students, is keeping tuition affordable, keeping tuition aid up. And my concern is, I don't want to sit here saying passing or tying the hands of the investment office, because if it's an investment that's providing money to the university, providing money to our endowment, providing money to our budget, and enabling us to not raise tuition, not lay off staff, and maybe make increased financial aid, or use the money that we're making from it on other things, I'm just concerned if that you believe that we should be tying the hands of the investment office in the future should coal become a viable investment, specifically also looking at this current, restating the fact that we want to divest from all fossil fuels, even fossil fuels, primarily oil, in the endowment, and it is a profitable part of our endowment.
So I think first of all, like tying the hands of the investment office is a whole specifically. Like I don't think that's really like a viable argument, to be honest, because I like since they already don't invest in it, and since like there's a lot of ethical implications to investing in coal and environmental implications, like I think that we should take a stance there. Even though there's like a tiny fraction of a chance, actually I personally don't think that there's any chance that it will become profitable ever. But like even if it did, that doesn't mean that it's the only thing that's profitable. We have plenty of other things that we invest in for our endowment. And like I think that we can take a stance and say that it's one thing that we should not invest in. I don't know,
well, yeah, exactly. I guess we just want to really reaffirm what has already been established, and the fact that that fossil fuel that has, or I guess our view that it's not like there aren't other reduction options where fossil fuels are indisputably the best investment option. We just believe that to make a consistent stance on it, and also
it's like
Is there anyone else who would like to be, Rep. Lisa Lee, sorry.
Okay, for all assembly members, please know that these are not my opinions. These are Syed Ali Khan's opinions. I just want to read what she wrote since we had to step out for this meeting. But he says, the fact that the student assembly is hearing this resolution shows a double standard. Last year, another constituency group was barred from even speaking on the divestment resolution. The reason given to them by many being that the SA should focus on campus issues and not political agendas. It is our responsibility to make tough decisions, and if we decided not to, it is unfair to other groups on campus if we pass this resolution. I hope you consider this comment as you analyze the resolution. So those are his words, and I'm sure that you can reach out to him afterwards.
Yeah, so technically this is new business, so that's okay. I'm going to keep going down the list, but try to remember not to be too argumentative unless you want to move to business of the day, and then we can change that. Director of Elections, Amicus.
Yes, I have just one question. What is your stance on investing in gold as a part of public financial services? Gold is already present in the form of stocks. In a derivative industry, be it the university, my interest now, or my own interest in the future, what will be your stance on that?
So, are you asking if we're already investing in
the reality? We're not investing in the reality,
yeah.
In the future, the derivative space is just a cold stock or a company that is profiting from cold prices in the future. What will be your stance on that?
Oh, I guess you missed. That was basically your question, right?
Well, I'm interested in saying, like, what if it's a mutual fund or an index fund or something?
Yeah.
Like
that? Oh, okay.
There are all sorts of instruments that can be created which can have a whole stock in them. And many companies around the world might be investing in those instruments. So you might not be investing directly in a whole stock, but you might have whole as some sort of instrument in your whole stock.
So I think yeah, so I think to respond to that, like, we see less and less frequently that they are a part of those, even the commingled funds, where it's like a bunch of different things in the portfolio, because of their uncomfortability. So I don't think that it would be a serious issue, but even if it is, I think that, like, it's okay to take a step on it, because they've said, like, administrators have told us, we've heard them, like, firsthand, that we do not invest in coal, so that would be, like, hypocritical.
Also, it's difficult for us to take a stance on this because we aren't allowed access to the financial specifics of investing the endowment. So, from the information that we have available to us, we can support that course of action.
Okay, so
Rep.
Lee. Rep. Brown.
This is our argument.
Okay. Getting ready for the second speaker's list if no one has anything new to say.
Motion to table until next semester.
There's been a motion to table until next semester. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, I'm going to ask that we take a vote. If you are in favor of moving this until next semester, please raise your hand or placard. if you are opposed. If you'd like to abstain. By a vote of 14-3-1, we are going to table resolution 36 until next semester. So this will be the second thing on the agenda. There is a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? I'm going to ask that by unanimous consent that we adjourn this meeting. There's no dissent?
Dissent.
All right, there's dissent. You have 30 seconds to explain your dissent.
I would like at least to bring it up. I don't think
it
would be very controversial in nature, but I understand
everyone was fully able. All right. So that means we're going to have to basically vote to adjourn. If you are in favor of adjourning the meeting, going home right now, say yes. If you are not in favor of going home just yet and you'd like to hear Lindsay's resolution, vote no. All of those in favor? All those opposed. All those who'd like to abstain. By a vote of 9-5-1, we are going to adjourn this meeting. Remember, if you have your agenda for today with you, try to put it, or your binder, put it away in the conference room before you leave for break, because if you lose it, you're not getting a new one. Have a great break, everyone!
Have a great break!
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.